Yeah, brother, I was getting my ass kicked. And I was winning off submissions because, you know, jiu-jitsu and discipline and blah, blah. Brother, I was getting my butt whooped for five rounds, seven rounds. It was not great. Man, it was cool because I was the only American on the team. And I was the only American that some of the guys that I played with had ever played with before, like, in their rugby career. Wow. So I was over there and they're like, oh, weird. Like, you know, rugby's in America now. Like, oh, that's cool. You know, I was able to kind of fit into this structure where, I mean, the guys taught me, you know, a big culture over there. They you know, they taught me the rugby songs from their side. They were the reason why I ended up getting hooked in Japan, and then meeting people in Japan, shaking hands, having conversations, ended up going back to Japan, and then doing you know, 4 or 6 month stint in Japan, playing rugby in Okinawa, playing rugby in Tokyo, or, you know, playing rugby in Hong Kong, and essentially just kind of building that repertoire of taking the blessings that was given to me and then seeing if I can then compound on that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. You are now tuned in to the greatest of all time, the greatest of all time.
Welcome to the Rugby Swag Show.
Welcome to another episode of Rugby Swag. My name is Gift Time at Baylor, and of course, this is a show where we get to talk to people about the things that they've done, created, or taken advantage of in rugby, as well as keeping you up to date with what's happening around rugby and around the world. I was about to say mundo, and my Portuguese is coming out. Around the world, or even domestically. Y'all, I hope you guys have had a great weekend, man. Happy Monday. If you're not watching or listening to this on Monday, happy day that you are getting a chance to check this out, y'all. We got an amazing guest for you today, but before we get started, please, if you can, go ahead and like and subscribe to this channel. This is Gift Time Rugby on YouTube, or of course, absolutely, please like and subscribe on our podcast network. You know, we need all the love so that we can continue to get the algorithm back up and be able to get the stories about the people who are making massive impacts in rugby to the right people who need to hear about this, so we can continue to grow, develop, and build this game out like never before. In addition to that, y'all, look, you can also find us on social media at Instagram at Rugby Swag Show. You can find us on X at Gift A Belu, GIFTEGBELU, or at Gift Time Rugby on X. And then, of course, on every other platform, TikTok at Gift Time Rugby, Facebook at Gift Time Rugby, obviously right here on YouTube at Gift Time Rugby, and then synonymously on Twitch at Gift Time Rugby, so you guys can be able to keep up with whatever format that you guys feel you are able to consume our content in the best way. So I appreciate it. Give us a follow on there. And of course, if you guys do listen on just podcasts and you have friends that need it just on podcasts, please go ahead and send them. They can hear us on every major streaming from Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and every major podcast streaming network that you guys can get on. We out there. So I hope you guys have been taking care of yourself. Yo, man, I am truly, truly excited about this guest for today. We're going to be bringing on Corey Jones, multiple-time national championship, pro rugby player, but more importantly, pro freelance rugby player. Absolutely was an honor to be able to talk to him and get his story and really delve into how he has been able to find a profession in rugby in an arena that is not traditional professional sports play, but he has been able to find himself in many tournaments, especially over the last decade. He has gone from South Africa to the U.S., to Caribbean, to Thailand, to London, and all across the board, being able to play professional rugby without necessarily being a part of a league. So I think this is something that can really help for many up-and-coming rugby players who are trying to find a space in this arena of rugby where there's still a lot of uncertainty about payment and uncertainty about opportunity. But when I say, like, if you find a way There is a way. And so if you want a way, there is a way. And Corey gives us a great look into what he has done to be able to get to this point. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. And of course, I want to thank our special sponsor, Health Enhanced Food, the best specialty baking mixes in the business. Make sure that you guys have the ability to eat the breads that you like for the dietary needs that you guys need. Health Enhanced Food is out to make sure that you can be able to stay healthy, stay satisfied, but also stay safe with the foods that you're able to take. Man, definitely go check out healthenhancedfoods.com to be able to find the baking mix that works best for you. All right, y'all. I don't want to hold off for too much longer. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode with the Corey Jones, freelance pro rugby player. Check it out.
I'm going to let you get back to the show in a moment, but I want to talk to you about our sponsors, Health Enhanced Foods, the best specialty flours in the business. What does that mean for you? That is the flours that allow you to be able to get the nutritious need from your bread made. That's muffins, bread, croissants, whatever, pancakes and muffins. It will give you the opportunity to be able to get the best while still being able to eat like you wanted to. We have various amounts of products available for those who have special dietary needs to those who are looking for a special health outcome. And of course, because they're part of the Rugby Swag Show, we want to let you know that you got a chance to go to healthenhancedfoods.com and use code Rugby Swag to be able to get 20% off your first order. Y'all, this is something that you're going to need. You got to build up, have your energy at the best, be the maximum. It's 2024. Let's do the best. But now, I want you guys to get into it. Let's get back to the show.
Welcome to another great episode of Rugby Swag. We got another special guest for you today. Y'all, look, man, I've known him for 10 years now, all right? But that's just one small component. This man is a multiple-time champion, national champion, international champion, collegiate playoffs champion-ish. You know, actually, no, collegiate champion as well. I'm going to say it as well that. But you know what? This man has been doing it from the Premier Rugby 7 professionally, done it with MLR, done it with USA Rugby, and gone around the world. Man's living the dream. We got the man, the legend, Corey Jones. Corey, man, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yo, yeah, brother. What's up, man? What's up?
And look, man, I have to say, look, I always tell people, we talked right before, and I'm gonna say what I said on camera, off camera, man, it's been a decade since we first had our first ever conversation. I think you might have been my third interview on field ever, and even from that moment, like, you had the energy of being he is him from that, from Arkansas, he is him. And to see where you've been able to grow and rise and what you've been able to develop on both on and off the field has been legit a pleasure and an inspiration to watch. And I wanted to give your flowers for being such a significant component of what is making this rugby world change and making it in your way, which I think is very, very significant to the story.
Man, brother, thank you. It's funny. Man, we started talking about this. I was thinking about that first time, and it was Texas State. The whole thing started off of an intercept from inside. Like it all started from the intercept, and you put the Superman track from behind it, and I gave this big diving try. Like, man, that was the very, very beginning, man. So it's really cool to be able to still, you know, full circle this ride with you.
Man, absolutely, absolutely, yeah, and. Yo, like I said, a lot changed. It was great to see the beginning, and it's very rare that you ever get a chance to watch people grow directly. But, you know, going into that, there was still a lot I didn't get to know about you, except for that you had this wonderful ability. So, as it goes, I always like to say, you spoke Superman, I say every superhero has their origin story, brother. And for you, I want to know, all right, your origin, how'd you get started with rugby?
Man, I guess everything is a kind of a test to Julie McCoy in Little Rock, Arkansas, ARPTC. Actually went to University of Arkansas on a baseball scholarship. You know, I was playing baseball age 4 to age 18. I was locked in MLB pathway, going to the Redbirds after my sophomore after my sophomore year. Like, I was on that track. And then got to the University of Arkansas. Didn't really feel it with the guys. Didn't really feel it with the team. For my collegiate athletes out there, you kind of know what it's like. It's a full-time job. So you got to love what you do because you can't focus on your school and, you know, hate getting up early mornings for tournaments. So ended up walking
5 a.m. morning.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. mornings and be miserable the entire time. Yeah. So I ended up dropping baseball, walking onto the football team. Did spring ball with the Razorbacks, a couple of fires from a couple of head coaches ended up landing me in the hands of the rugby team at the University of Arkansas with Coach Fife and Coach Franz. And man, they were slick with it too. They kind of pulled up and they were like, "Hey guys, sad to hear that your coach got into this volleyball scandal and the organization dipped." It was it was Bobby Petrino back in.
You were with Petrino?
Yeah.
Wild. Okay.
Yeah. So they're like, "Hey, we hate to hear, you know, what happened, blah, blah, blah. Just stick around rugby." They kind of gave us the background of it, how like rugby came before football and it was like the father to the sport. And they're like, "Just stick around it. And then by the time the organization picks back up, you'll be that much better." And I was like, "Oh, perfect. Like, I'm always a man of my craft. Like, I can find little tools and ways where I can learn from this and then apply to something else." I was like, "I'll just do that."
Right.
Ended up being right before leaving for summer. So all the walk-ons ended up having to go home for summer camp. So we missed summer camp for football. And I found Julie McCoy for summer sevens. And that was the biggest mistake University of Arkansas did, like, as a football program. Because I immediately, like, threw it all away. I was stuck in the rugby so hard. Wasn't digging the short shorts just yet. But, man, something about the tri-time dives, like, completely set it off for me.
Bro, that is amazing. I didn't realize any of that. So that makes a lot of sense as to even just the ability, but your ability to be able to learn and be able to adjust so quickly was tremendous, especially even with Arkansas State. Whenever you guys are dealing with the Mid-America region, I think at that time. So, you know, playing some solid competition at that point. To be able to fall over. I love it. Wait, so did that mean that you ended up going down to Little Rock for a bit of time as well, playing with Julie?
Yeah, so, I mean, I can't just right place, right time. You know, I got to give everything to my Lord and Savior. And it's kind of weird how it all works. I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. I never knew about Julie McCoy. Never knew about Little Rock rugby. Never knew about the wealth and the knowledge and the culture that was built down there. And it wasn't until me getting linked in with a couple guys in college, they were like, "Hey man, why don't you come back home for the summer?" Which I never used to go home for the summers. I was always traveling for something else or a part of some program or some travel ball, yada, yada, yada. So I finally, my first summer coming back home, getting back around the family, found Julie McCoy. And she was probably one of the best coaches I've ever had.
That's so legit. So kind of quick backtrack. So for you, obviously, you were a high-level athlete. To be able to have the baseball contract and baseball scholarship as well as being able to walk on to the football team, was athletics a very pinnacle function of your family, or is it something that you've just been able to solely excel at?
Yeah, no. So my mom was a big softball athlete. My dad was a SEAL in the Navy. So I kind of have the genetic structure and then the German Shepherd training.
Broke you down to be able to build you up. Right?
Yeah, exactly. The breakdown discipline to, you know, just kind of really, really hone whatever I'm kind of working towards. And I think that was probably the best thing of it. I got a keen eye from baseball. The short stint that I was with football kind of, you know, taught me to take care of my body, take care of my hands. The program at the University of Arkansas was still top class. I mean, SEC ball, no matter where you get, it's going to be top class.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So a lot of really cool things there. And that just kind of taught me more how to be a professional in what I'm doing. And that everything just kind of just built and stacked and stacked and stacked until getting my first professional contract with rugby. And then everything else kind of took off in my own fruition.
Okay. So, you know, going into it with rugby and especially obviously getting a chance to play with Julie, you know, for you, like, what was that moment where you were just like, okay, this is for me? Because you talk about the try time, but like, what was it that was different because if you've played football, you've done baseball, you understand competition, right? Like, so what was it that was like, oh no, this is that.
Yeah, man. Man, to be completely honest, I was like talking about athletics. I was doing mixed martial arts from age 6 to like age 17. And ended up doing like an amateur career with that. And brother, I was getting, I'm not sure. Do we cuss on this?
We free. Independent media, baby.
Ass kicked. Yeah, brother, I was getting my ass kicked. And I was winning off submissions because, you know, jujitsu and discipline and blah, blah. But I was getting my butt whooped for 5 rounds, 7 rounds. And it was not great. I eventually ended up getting out of it because I wasn't serious enough. And I was just getting tagged in my head so many times and then getting somebody in a chokehold. And it's like, all right, you know, technically you're the winner, but you shouldn't be the winner. So the big aha moment for me was when I found rugby, it was like, guys care about their bodies as well. Like, you can't hide behind the shield of football. You know, you can't hide behind the hands. Like, you know, what you hit me with, you have to feel yourself. Right. And what like sent it home for me was you can't get crack blocked in rugby.
Ooh.
My God. In my short stint of football, I played football my junior, senior year of high school, and then the little bit that I walked on with, the pain of getting crack blocked from a slot receiver, not knowing that a strong safety who doesn't care about his life is just like walking down on you, man.
No, honestly, though, bro.
That was
I get
the
it.
Aha moment.
It's like, you know what? I don't have to keep going. I don't need to keep my head on that much of a swivel like that.
I'm serious. Like, I got hit a couple times and I thought, you know what? Basketball probably isn't that hard to walk on. I try some basketball next because this is not okay.
Oh my God. I can imagine just like that one day. It's just like you came back from training, doing some MMA in the gym. You're just like, bro, I just sparred. All right, let me get in front of these guys. Let me go do a run. All right, we're about to run this route and black.
serious. I mean, not that I can remember. Thank God I've never got a concussion in the gridiron. But there are times where like you just get hit in the side of your ear, and you think like, oh, that's got to be illegal. It's got to be illegal. And they're like, oh, good hit defense. And you're like, somebody drove a car onto the field. Like, I didn't see it, but I know what a car would feel like if I got hit by one.
Bro, and especially if you're not used to, like, it's not that you're not used to getting hit, but there's a difference between being hit and, like, levitating almost. Like, I remember for me, there's been 2 times this happened. It was one time in high school where I was on a kickoff, and I'm running it down, and I had 2 guys, like, up down me where they popped me up in the air and spun me and I hit the ground. Oh, like, what the hell just happened? Yo, what's happening? It's like this was supposed to happen. When did gravity just go away, right? I need to question a lot of things.
No.
The only other time it happened where I think I got lifted up was one time at Battleship. Where I think Florida State, what was it? No. It was the Atlanta the Atlanta Renegades. They had brought like some D-end dude, straight D-ends, all right? And they were solid, weren't great, but bruh, I tried to run through 2 of them. Literally both of them picked me up like I was a freaking what do you call it? The tackle pad.
Oh, yeah,
whatever.
The tackle back, yeah, the sack back.
Yeah. And I was just like, all right. I don't like this. Humans were not meant to be in the air like this. Makes you question your entire existence, bro.
Oh, man. See, and that's why I'm so locked in to rugby, and not only rugby, sevens rugby, because, like, you just don't make that kind of contact. longevity of my entire career comes from me not having that type of career. Yeah.
Pure fly half right there. Pure fly half positioning.
Yep. Mr. Facilitator is the new nickname that's been coined now. So, yeah. I own it. That makes
sense. I freaking love it. I love it. So, okay. So you're realizing you're getting this chance to be able to be in camp and dealing with Julie. Obviously, you're a really disciplined guy. You've already known it, Navy SEAL dad, obviously in sports. Was there something, what was Julie McCoy's training like at the ARPTC? Because I've heard that she is a tough trainer. Obviously, what she did with the USA women's team, really getting, they were a well-conditioned team from what I understand. Well-conditioned team. From your perspective, was there something that felt different than other trainings that you had before? Or was it kind of to the match of expectation? Or was it beyond what you had expected?
Yeah, I guess running into Julie from the jump, she was one of the harder coaches. I mean, again, one of the best coaches, one of the most loving coaches who really looked at me, like really had that nurture aspect, that empathizing aspect. And, you know, blame it because, you know, she was a doctor for X amount of years, maybe because, you know, she's a woman for whatever reason, but like she was able to reach her athletes a different way than other people or other coaches were able to reach me. But I assumed leaving Julie's camp or leaving ARPTC, that was the standard of rugby. So I would get to other programs and be like, oh, this is a cakewalk, because I mean, Julie would have a lot of activities, a lot of games, but there were so many meters on legs and there was such a science behind it. So she made you think behind your games. And if you didn't think behind your games, there was a penalty behind it, which was normally some other type of conditioning. So you were either fit and smart or you were dumb and just a freak athlete. And it went one of two ways. And I kind of learned on the back end that I can be a good athlete, but still smart and think my way through these activities and go really, really far.
Did it change even the way that you were doing your day-to-day lifestyle? Because, you know, like you had mentioned before, when you're on the baseball team, you're not feeling it. It makes school a lot harder. Now you're on the rugby team. You've had this opportunity with Julie. How did it impact your collegiate life?
I mean, geez, this was 10 years ago, 13 years ago.
We old, baby.
Yeah, this was a long time ago. But I don't know, man. I can only think of positive times back then. I mean, now when I got back locked in with the team, I was more thinking of, I mean, obviously they had standards, goals, grades can't fall below X, Y, Z, you know, you can't do this and that. And also, again, I was a little privileged because I made such a good impact with the coaching staff, with the football team. I was still able to sneak in and get a couple services here and there. Nice. The whole tutor program I took advantage of. Like, there were a lot of things being a part of an SEC school that I still was able to take a part of. So I took rugby probably just as serious, just as structured, even though it was a club sport, just because of what I'd had before that. So my work life or my rugby and school life balance kind of meshed pretty well, just because I had a good culture, good team around me, and then a great foundation set up beforehand.
Man, I love that. You know, and again, I think there's always that component when it comes to trying to figure out college and the college life as well as the rugby life that a lot of people are still trying to figure out to this day. Because even for 2014, you know, I feel like we were on the early stage of a lot of the shifts that are happening now. And so, you know, being able to kind of hinder inside of it, like seeing more scholarship programs start to pop up or seeing these bigger programs starting to be a part of your day-to-day action was starting to kind of seep in more and more. So finding a way to just find that balance while also maintaining that discipline, especially whenever, like, obviously we're a heavy party environment as well, whenever you're in rugby, that's just rugby. it adds that next fact. So, that's like legit kudos on being able to see that. How'd your parents take it whenever you switched over? Because obviously going to Arkansas for baseball and then be like, hey, y'all, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go do this rugby thing. Oh, you got a scholarship? No, but I really like it.
My parents were, I guess, they're indifferent about it. I was supposed to kind of take the military track, the military medical track that my father took, and we ended up having a deal that if I was able to get a baseball scholarship, that I could pursue athletics instead of going into the military or going, you know, into the medical field. And so then when I kind of came to, I didn't come to them and tell them that I wasn't doing baseball till after I had walked onto the football team. Like I'd gotten that first.
Like, make sure that backup was ready to go.
I'm also going to. And then when like the head coach thing happened and all the walk-ons got dropped, that was like another blow. But I was able to cover that up to be like, hey guys, I'm coming home for the summer. So like, I never really told them like what I'm jumping into. It was like, oh hey, I'm trying this new sport. You know, it's a club thing. We're trying to stay active. Like I never really told them I was serious about it. Until probably junior year when I took my first contract to Ireland for the Kinsale Sevens with Rah Rah Rugby. That was the first time. I was sponsored by Hooligan at that time. And that was probably the first one where I was like, hey guys, I think I could do something different in America and actually make a living off this.
Yo, okay. So let's kind of go into that. You know, you're entering into rugby. You're getting your playtime. You're getting already some of the best coaching. So what was the switch over? Well, obviously you kind of talked about it with the contract for Ireland. How did you end up getting that that connection with Hooligan, the clothing company, obviously, and then being able to get that contract to be able to go and play over in Ireland with them?
They kind of approached me. It was something that had hit the organization when I was at the University of Arkansas. Somehow they had reached out to the South African coaches. South African coaches like, we got just the sevens guy that y'all are looking for. I'm a broke college student at that point in time. And the people at Hooligan just kind of saw something in me. They're like, you know, this guy's going to be something special. So they're like, let's get you over there and see if you can play with international talent. You can play with guys who've been playing this entire life, even though you're on year three or, you know, year four. So it was more at that stage, it was more of them blindly thinking, you know what, we are supporters of University of Arkansas. We're Razorback fans. We're Razorback rugby fans. We're now Corey Jones fans. We think that, you know, you could do something pretty cool, maybe even touch the national team, which is unheard of at the University of Arkansas.
Right.
So they sent me on my way.
Yeah. Yo, wait, did UA have that good of a support network around it where there was that many people accessing? I mean, I know like Arkansas State over in Jonesboro. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got a little bit of access just because ASU, but UA, you know, over here in Fayetteville, like was there a strong connection between them in terms of the people that were seeing them or Little Rock, was it like through Little Rock where people are seeing it? Like, do you know what that connection was?
They probably could have contacted the University of Arkansas head coaches, Fife and Franz. They could have potentially contacted them on accident, trying to contact A-State.
There's Arkansas there. That should be the same. Why would anyone have two Arkansas?
Exactly. Like, you know, Arkansas State had the better rugby, straight up and down, they had the better rugby players. We'd play Arkansas State every year and lose to them by 60. Like my biggest takeaway or my biggest like award from the Arkansas A-State rivalry was I won man of the match one time and I was able to score and their coach lost their mind. They're like, nobody should be scoring on them. Like that, like there's like small little takeaways from that. Like, I don't think that they were trying to contact us, but when it came around to it, like again, like the Lord, you just put me in the right place. I raised my hand. A company said, you know what, we'll back him over there. And I ended up having amazing, amazing results in Kinsale.
Man, you know, it's funny how a lot of these stages get set, and it's wild. You talk about like God's path and just not knowing what it's going to be, but when you look back at it, you kind of see how it all plays itself out, and where it's like, oh man, this feels so obvious now, but in its moment, you know, you're just talking random events, you know, leading up to that Ireland game. Obviously, you said your dad's a Navy SEAL. Had you traveled a lot overseas prior to that game?
No, not at all. So like what my dad was doing, I couldn't talk to you about. And even if I wanted to, I don't know anything about it. So my dad took a lot of time, a lot of trips separately than me and my mom's. Like, my mom was my biggest support system. My dad was in my life the entire time, but mom's a big support system. When dad had to leave for work, mom was the one going to my games, you know, mom's one picking me up kind of thing. So it was just me and her through a lot of it. So we didn't travel much. She, you know, held down the job, held down me. All I had to do was make good grades and keep my head out of trouble. So
representing for her with that
up until getting to that Irish grass.
Man, so whenever you got that call up, like, you know, you're now knowing that you're about to go overseas, you're playing with what you assume is some of the best players that you've ever, not even assuming, that you probably have ever played with maybe at that time. You know, how was that even as a family getting to have that acknowledgement?
Man, it was cool because I was the only American on the team, and I was the only American that some of the guys that I'd played with had ever played with before, like in their rugby career. Wow. So I was over there and they're like, oh, weird. Like, you know, rugby's in America now. Like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, I was able to kind of fit into this structure where, I mean, the guys taught me, you know, a big culture over there. They you know, they taught me the rugby songs from their side. You know, they taught me the tendencies and the do's and don'ts on tour. So I'm a very big lads on tour kind of guy. And like, if you don't have a good tour, you're not going to have a good tournament. And I see like a lot of these organizations go on tour and they may either be too strict or they, you know, have these requirements or this and that and this and that. And then if like guys aren't enjoying or girls aren't enjoying the tour that they're on, they're not going to perform well. And that was just one thing. We ended up doing very, very well at that tournament. And I attest that to the coaching staff, obviously the guys around me, but just the culture that they brought in a week's time.
Right. No, I think that's dope because I always find like that's the part that makes it easier. Like for me, my come to rugby moment wasn't what happened on the field, was when I went to social tournament pitcher tent. I always tell this, like for me, when I went to pitcher tent and was able to get like the social feel, and that's when it felt like, oh, being with the team and being able to vibe with the culture that was presented there. That's whenever it like locks in. So whenever you're talking about people setting up an environment, especially on a tour like that, where it is accessible for the individual player, especially for a new person, as well as like accessible in the sense that it's fun, it's active, people can be able to connect while also serious enough that you guys have an outcome. Like, that's like the perfect combination that goes out from that, right?
Man, seriously. And like, I had a fairy tale ending to that tournament. I mean, everybody goes to tournaments or goes to these tournaments to get seen. Like that's like the unrealistic, like still thought process that you go out there, you go and play for the opportunity that somehow somebody spots you. So when I was playing there, I can't remember his first name, Coach Jones, he was the coach for Munster. He's now since passed away. He was out there. And after the tournament, he approached me and asked me, you know, my name, who I was, yada, yada. They ended up talking to the coach that I was over there with quite extensively. And probably 24 hours before I was supposed to fly out of Ireland, they approached me again. I was like, hi, we'd like for you to stay and play in the Munster Academy here in Ireland. And we'd like to keep you here full time. You'd go to school here in Ireland. We'd set you up with, you know, this, and this, and essentially start working you into our system, not knowing that the overall outcome was to be potentially Ireland 7.
Munster player. God, dog. Wait, so, okay. You know, it's really interesting. This already beginning has a very unique element of professionalism already from jump. I mean, obviously, you're entering Arkansas and Julie, but like when you're now taking that next level, it already feels professional. Did you look at that time and be like, oh, is this a normal thing? Or did you realize the absolute obscurity an anomaly of an existence that was happening in your early career.
I don't know. It's like you don't know what you don't know. So right. I kind of assumed that. I mean, I'm still back then. I was a loud mouth. I was the life of the party. You know, I was probably a bit arrogant. I had to be starting my humble pie. You know, just as everybody else did who found quick success. Right. But I thought in my head, being approached by this coach and by this organization, that this happens, it just doesn't happen to me or doesn't happen right. to Americans. Like the running joke of tour was, we got to teach the American everything because Americans don't leave their country. And now we're in a new country. Like we got to like teach the baby how to walk kind of thing. Lord. So it was more the fact of like, in my head, I realized, oh, this happens. It just doesn't happen to Americans. And my brother, get funny, brother, I called my mom and said, hey, like I got approached by this coach here in Ireland. And they want me to stay in Ireland. They don't want me to fly out to America. And she was like, well, call your dad. Tell me what your dad thinks. I said, okay, cool. Dylan. So I call my dad. Dad's like, yeah, it's a cool opportunity, but you know, what's rugby? And like, you have to realize that I've only been playing rugby for 2.5 years, 3 years max. And my parents have no clue what's going on. They right. don't know what rugby is. So I was like, yeah, mom, the organization's Munster. She's like, what's a Munster? Like the cheese? Like, no, Corey, like that's a fake invitation. You're going to get trafficked. You need to come home.
Yo, you know what? Real talk.
I don't know any better. Right. Mom, hey, like it's a taken situation. Liam Neeson is going to have to come and save you if you just miss your flight back home. And I was like, yeah, you know, that does, you know, that makes sense. And my dad's like, you know what, if they really want you, like they'll offer you again. And I was like, no, Dad, I don't think this is that kind of opportunity. I don't think rugby works that way. It's like the NFL that it's like, you miss your one chance. Like, yeah, no, we'll just like fly a jet back over and come get you again. I was like, I think like they're serious about this. He was like, look, I don't know anything about it. I don't have anything on the radar about it. You know, cut your losses. You need to come back to the States because that's where you're safe. That's home, yada, yada.
Right.
So I ended up being like, talking to their SNC on GIF on the phone, being like, hey, yeah, this sounds like a good idea. When I get back to the hotel, I'm going to phone my parents. I've already talked to them. So I'm going to phone my parents, then talk to the head coach, and then I'll get back to you. He's like, all right, man, sounds good. As soon as I hang up, it's like, now boarding for LA.
Yeah.
I'm scanning my ticket, and I go get on the flight. Like, I had their phone number, I had their email. I remember like reaching back out to them, crickets. They're like this arrogant, stupid American just played us. They probably never went off. I probably ruined it for everybody. And this is my bad on live. This is my bad, guys, because I probably ruined it for literally everybody after that one. But I mean, you don't know what you don't know.
Bruh, they were like, the next one that's coming, AJ McGinty was the next one, and he's already from England in a sense, so we're not even getting full American like that. They might be born, but they ain't really
American. AJ, they said, nope, send him to the Saracens. Like, we don't want him anymore. America's ruined everything. It's too late.
Done. Okay, you're done. You're done, mate.
Laddie, you're done. Yeah. So after that kind of got really serious for me, and I realized, okay, I can probably do something for. I can probably make a living off of this, and that's where the contracts, the media started coming out, and I started taking a little more serious from a business side.
So, okay, so you know, let's go, because I think this is the part that is the most pinnacle components of where your story goes, because. Like I said, your situation, I think, is very, very unique, particularly within a U.S. environment. And to some extent, I'm a little surprised that more people haven't blueprinted it. But I'm hoping that, you know, obviously there's some context. And I think also it allows it to be able to develop the game, because I'm a big believer that rugby needs, especially here in the U.S., needs to be better as an industry, not necessarily just as a sport. And I think whenever it comes to that, there's a lot of people who have now really gotten screwed over in a number of ways because of the fact that the industry is either, especially from the men's side, is very, very stopped up out of expectations and historical context versus the ability to be progressive and to be able to see the bigger picture when it comes to it. So kind of with you, I'll say from my perspective, you know, I had known what you were doing within Arkansas up until, I think, a little bit after you, until you graduated, right? And then all of a sudden you disappeared and then you appeared at Yale. So like was one, I want to understand what that jump, because that is a jump, Corey. Like, that's not a little jump. That is like a monumental Superman over the formerly known as Twin Towers jump, right? Yeah. You know, so like for you, what kicked in between, man, these guys over here at Munster are now showing me that there is a financial pathway in rugby that I could use to, I'm about to go get my business degree over at this Ivy League that is an exclusive network of people that can change literal lives at the signing of a paper or a contract.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of goes back to the old saying, not like who you know, but who knows you kind of thing. As soon as I graduated from University of Arkansas, I started traveling. I started marking off countries, and I started freelancing sevens rugby. Essentially, I was selling myself to these teams for, you know, tournaments, tournament-by-tournament basis, or a couple of months, or the summer sevens series, depending on how, you know, when they needed me. Yeah. And supplementing everything else through sponsorships. So I was sponsored by like Zoomies, or I was sponsored by Wyndham Hotel, or I tried to get a Nike sponsorship at the very, very beginning, which led me pretty far to kind of like, they kind of taught me in a way of how to brand myself, because yeah. They're like, okay, we need you to have a hashtag. And it was like, oh, I don't have a hashtag. They're like, okay, well, you need to develop a hashtag. Then you need to develop a logo. And then you need to develop like an image. And then like, it just kind of continued to walk itself. Alexa, off. It kind of continued to like walk itself from the, yeah, got, the AI's listening. You know, to walk
said, hey, I want to let you know, I'm here with you.
To the point where I was able to then develop and brand myself to then go to these other countries, Bangkok tens, and then essentially get it paid for. And then start to get it subsidized, and then start to get a game check, and then start to have an agent, and then develop my own contract so that teams know ahead of time, like, this is, you know, this is what it takes to get Corey Jones. And then, you know, this is the incentive bonus, and yada, 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 yada. And then, so then going into Yale, I got stuck in with Dave Fisher. And again, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. Like, because I know Elon Musk, and I, you know, his podcast, and Joe Rogan lives in Austin, but he doesn't know me, so
right,
I need to help out. And Dave opened a lot of doors for me, a whole lot of doors.
Okay, so before we go to there, you hit a lot of points that I think are spectacular. All right, so kind of off bat, you know, you're talking about you're coming off of the U.S. and you start traveling, so. Was it like you were just like, I see country, I go? Or was it just like, I guess, like, were you collecting video of yourself? Like, what was it when you're saying you like, I just went to countries and started playing? Like, there are the different kinds of like, what was it that you made, let you know the decision to be like, let me go see what's more out there, and then the ability to be able to do it?
When I first got my first agent, 2016, into 2016, they were like, we need to develop you a website. And then obviously me being young, freelancing rugby, they want to charge all this XYZ, and then the agent goes. So me and my mom sat down and we developed a website. And then now that website has my hashtag, has my logo, has my brand, my image name. And these coaches, these organizations are now finding this website, and they're seeing the highlight videos. They see how I carry myself. Then we get on an interview or a phone call, and they like, you know, the kind of person that I sound like. And I think that's kind of like, you have to be the person that somebody's going to willing and invest in. Been to South Africa three times now. And it's funny, me and Cecil were talking, and he was like,
you and who?
Cecil Africa.
Cecil. Okay. For a second, I thought you said SZA. I was like, hold up. Corey, come down. You're like, what? We're gonna just slide that. Okay.
Like, me and Scissor was chopping him. Me and E40 was in the back.
That's a homegirl. Like, yo, how'd you not know I didn't? I knew. Come on now.
No. So me and Cecil were talking, and he was like, it's amazing the amount of people in South Africa that could walk onto the team right now and be better than the guys that are out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, man, there's no way. Like, there's no way. And he was like,
yeah, they've been playing all their lives. They got the youth factor. They've access.
And he was talking about out of the 12, 13 guys that are on tour right now, 7 could be replaced by guys from my hometown in their backyard. He's like, yeah. You think their feet are good? He said, you see the guys in my backyard. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, well, these guys, you know, for a better word, are poor. These guys don't know how to market themselves. These guys don't know how to speak correctly. Their English isn't great. Like,
right.
We can teach you to be a good rugby player, but if we can't teach you how to be marketable, then you're going to go around, you're going to say something crazy or do something wrong, which is going to hurt the brand. And which kind of made me start thinking about, okay, how am I carrying myself?
Right.
You know, what am I looking like on the backside? Like, I carry around a boombox everywhere. The music that I'm playing, what's coming through those speakers? Like, right. Is it a bunch of cussing, rapping? Like, we got time for that. Like, you know we're warming up. The guys are getting hyped. We're going to play what the guys want. But if we're just, you know, chilling, the music's loud, we're playing music over the tournament, it may be, you know, a little bit of soul classics. It may be the 70s. Right. It could be, you know, just a little bit of mix and match, you know, and just kind of just keeping a mind's eye of what image am I presenting, or what image is my team presenting now to other people? Because still here in the States, even though I'm playing on a team, like, there are other coaches at that tournament thinking, ah, next tour, like, we want to grab Corey, or next tour, we want to grab Simi or Missile or Zach or Nolan, or, you know, the whole list or roster of guys who, like, oh, we saw them play at that tournament. They did really good. I liked the way they spoke. I liked the way they handled themselves. We'll get them for the next one.
That's legit. You know, or it, you run a blueprint that makes sense, that I feel like rugby people should be knowing, you know, and the fact that not only were you able to pick up on that, that your mom was also able to be a part of that to help pick that up for you. So you had that support system in there, you know. But it's small nuances that play the name of the game. I feel like it's always the devil's in the details, right? You know, so when you're doing that idea and you're kind of reshaping and presenting your image, you know, you're talking 2016. We're talking the beginning heights of Instagram, now starting to kick off. Obviously, 2014 was started, but 2016, we're starting to get it. Were you feeling like that pressure where you needed to show out on your social medias and that was how you presented? Or did you feel like it was just, man, I'm all I need to do is just play and play well, and those people end up coming towards me?
Hey, everybody. This is just the Bray Tran sending out a personal little video diary to all you people out there, where I am going to document me riding most of the way between Singapore and Tokyo for the 2019 Rugby World Cup. It's number one is because it's part of my business. I do Rugby Lovers Guide to Asia. Number two is I want to bring a lot of exposure to the rugby clubs and the rugby NGOs and charities. Also, on a personal level, I just want to break the funk I've kind of felt I've been into for the last 10 years.
So for the next 12 months, I poured myself into the Singapore to Tokyo campaign, but it still wasn't enough. I needed help, and it came from Louisiana.
We in Singapore, baby!
Gift from Gift Time Rugby USA is a extroverted tour de force.
Say hi to my people out there.
Which makes up for my social shortcomings.
This place is unbelievable. It's not just, it's like,
what's he supposed to do?
Morons, a bunch of morons.
Guys, picture with me, picture. Australian, g'day mate, you can use my phone.
But what unites us is a hunger for adventure.
Off to KL, Kuala Lumpur. Woo! Yeah!
Woo! Gift, where are we?
We're in Vietnam!
Morning, Vietnam!
Mount Fuji, baby!
Our love of Asian rugby culture.
One, two, three, Central!
Yeah! Rugby is starting to develop here in Cambodia for women as well.
Valkyries, the mighty, mighty Valkyries!
And allows us to overcome incredible, incredible obstacles.
It's just got so thick. It's just so thick here now, it's pouring down rain again.
But coming to this Thai-Cambodia border has renewed all the aggression.
So the whole thing's gone buggered.
I got hit.
What?
I got tail-ended by a motorbike.
I can just feel that knee, that ankle just going in all the wrong directions under the weight of my body. But that doesn't compare to the pain of failure.
I'm dying. Oh, I'm dying.
And that's what I've been worried about this whole time. We're out here, we're running out of energy, we're running out of money, and we're feeling isolated. And yet at that critical moment, friends, family, sometimes complete strangers come on board. Before you know it, we're back in the game.
Tokyo, here we come!
Making a comeback! 4 weeks, 2,300 miles.
Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam.
After all the trials and tribulations, this ride had become deeply personal. All that mattered now was getting to that Rugby World Cup game in Tokyo.
Watch the full adventure at crugby.vhx.tv. That's C like S-E-E rugby.vhx.tv.
Yeah, buddy. All right. BZ.
Yeah, it was more of that. I didn't get into the social media scene heavy until a little bit before COVID. Like, I didn't understand social media. I was almost, you know, like the old folks, like, oh, that newfangled Instagram app, like, these kids don't need it. And then you realize now, like, that's where it's heading to. Like, that's
right.
If I would have jumped on it so much earlier, I could be, you know, that much farther. No, that kind of goes to my dad, just keeping me so disciplined. He's a person who did a lot of rips with me. A lot of reps, a lot of mental reps, a lot of questions, conversations, going on walks. Like, he was definitely the master Sifu in all of this, because, I mean, he kept me. He's the one who helped develop the professional that I am now, because it wasn't so much put it on Instagram. It was do your job and people will come to you. Be a good person and people will come to you, you know.
Right.
Get to the interview and you'll land the job. Like, what's on paper, what's on social media may not give the best look, but you keep winning tournaments, you keep being a good person, you keep being a good teammate. Teammates will talk to coaches. Coaches will reach out. And then that's kind of where you seal the deal.
You know, it's very funny because, especially when it comes to rugby sevens, I've always had the theory that I didn't feel rugby sevens had a level of profitability, simply just because of the fact that it's a lot of games. It's a lot of teams. Yes, it's quicker for the general audience, but it's also harder to be able to lock in on any one thing. So right now you're killing a lot of theory for me right now. I'm happy about that. But the other side of it is the leverage that you had of being able to work with these teams and these brands to both create visibility and valuable wins. So for you, how was it that you were selecting your tournaments or the teams that you selected to make sure that it matched with the value of what you're trying to present as a rugby team, as a rugby player, but also would allow you to be able to have a reach worthy enough where people wanted to, companies or so wanted to attach themselves to you to be able to obviously increase their brand, because if they're sponsoring you, you're a marketing element. So how was it that you were making your selections with that?
From a sponsorship wise, it was any and everybody. Like, let's not act like I was, you know, alive and thriving. I was alive. These sponsorships were helping me be a professional rugby player in America when that was unheard of. Right. I was able to live and pay rent and, you know, places that I weren't staying in because I was traveling out of a suitcase. But still gave me a sense of home, sense of purpose back in the States because of from a rugby side of it or a contract side of it, but I was taking anything that fit in the schedule. Right. If it fit in the calendar, I was traveling to it. I want to say COVID hit in 2020. So the end. Yeah. So that means 2019 leading up, I probably traveled 240, 250 days out of the 365 year.
Wow.
Traveling. Oh, Corey, can you come to this? This is my contract. Companies or organizations like, no problem. Boom. It's written in. And I didn't miss. I mean, thankfully enough, like none of my family members got sick. Nothing mm-hmm. tragic came up. So like I kind of developed a reputation that when Corey said he's going to be there. And this is the product we're going to get with Corey because he's dependable or he's reliable or, you know, whatever adjective you want to associate with that. But, you know, when I showed up, I did what my contract said I was going to do. And that just kind of gave more and more positive success towards my way.
Man, I love that. So you're doing all this. I always wondered, especially when it came to the later years, you know, 2022, 2021, and I guess you had it there, but why were you not on the USA players pool earlier? Because literally everybody around the world seems to be jockeying for Corey, or at least your services are available. So obviously you eventually did a tournament with USA Sevens team. Yeah. But for you, why did it take as long as it did, in your opinion?
Man, I'm not sure. That's something that I don't know, man. That used to give me, even thinking about it now, still brings up bad, man. It gives me a lot of anxiety. Like that's the question that keeps me up at night. I've had, you know, South African coaches and Welsh coaches, and I've had every coach and every player, and, you know, XYZ people, haters, fans, teammates, all ask me that same question. Mm. The head coach of the Canada Sevens said, man, Corey, if you were Canadian, like, you'd be on my roster. Like, it's tough to hear these other nations that are playing the same game in the same organization or same tournament, like same series.
Yeah.
Say, you know what, if you were a different code, or if you were from a different country, like, we would accept you. Like, it's tough to not have an answer of why my own country, like, won't accept me. Yeah, man, I'm not sure. I got a sniff, and I never got anything from it.
Mm. I mean, what was the camp like whenever you did make it? For I guess the training camp, did was it anything that you were surprised on? Was it anything that, you know, was I don't want to say larger, because again, you have a wide range of experience at that point. Like, was there something there that you were like, maybe this is, I still need to prep up for this?
So I always showed up to camp one of the fittest guys there. Something that Friday or anybody at the camp can always tell you, that Corey's the one of the fittest guys on the field. Like, I'm running sub 20 Bronco times. My fastest Bronco was, you know, a 4:18, I believe. Like, I'm doing well in conditioning wise, but getting there was always some work on it, like something else to do. So it's like, hey, Corey, like, you're doing good. We like this, but we need you to be more aggressive in attack. It's like, okay, cool. It's like, you're passing too much. And it's like, all right, like, that makes sense. There are times where I could go myself. I'm trying to look for the other person to, you know, set up the next play, yada, yada, yada. I'm not thinking, you know, too aggressively. So then I have to go away for the year. And I come back the next year with that problem fixed, checked off. You know, Corey, now it's your defense. Like, you're not tackling aggressively enough. And I'm like, man, it's Sevens. Like, do I just need to make the tackle, or do I need to, like, blow people up? And they're like, oh, right. Well, look at Martin Yusefo and Danny Barrett. And I'm like, man, both these guys are not the play style that I have. But I'm right. Receptive. I hear it. Cool deal. Like, let's go back there. Let's start working on defense. check, start blowing some guys up. Come back next year, you know what? Like, just defense, like positioning, you're not in the right space. Like, sounds good. Like, it was getting to the point where it was like, you walk in, it's like, I need a pail of water. Got a pail of water. You walk back, okay, come back in. What do you need? Oh, I need a brick. Got a brick. Come back. And like, I'm like running back and forth to the store instead of getting everything at once. And it just got to the point, it felt like, you know, it doesn't matter what, you know, it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter what skill set or what superpower I could then take on. Like, it wasn't going to happen. And this is now talking to coaches who have gone up to camp themselves and are learning what's going on. And I'm looking at guys being signed now. I'm looking at guys going to the camp, going on these series tours, and people are sending me messages. I'm watching the same games they are, like, Corey, why are they losing kickoffs? Or Corey, how come you're not in this position? How come you're not in that? And it's like, I don't have an answer to tell anyone. And it's tough now, because now I'm getting a little bit older, a little bit farther in my career. So eventually they're going to say, oh, it's because you're not old enough, or because you're too old.
Or too old. It's going to be too old.
And I'm coming off, you know, two national championships, MVP last year. You know, the age hasn't caught up with me yet, but I'm afraid that the excuse is going to keep building on until I'm 33, 34, 37. Then you're like, oh, now you're too old.
Right.
But I started back when I was 19.
Right.
And there was a time and a chance to put me there, to somebody to see the potential in me. And, you know, these other nations saw the potential in me. These other coaches and organizations saw the potential in me. But I'm not sure what.
Right. Is it still a desire for you to get make the USA team and be able to I guess, play for your country?
To be honest, it's died. It's died a little bit. If they called me today and was like, hey, Corey, like, we want you to come to camp. Guess what? My suitcase is already packed.
Right.
Yeah, I got a backpack already packed for those type of phone calls.
Right.
Like, hey, Corey, you got to leave tomorrow. Easy. The car already has gas. The car has electricity right now. Like,
there's no wait. There's no delay. Yo, we good to go. Like,
it's probably never going to die, but I have started changing my ideas when it comes to rugby, and I started playing more rugby for me. So, like, for an example, I know I'm probably rambling a little bit, but this, again, is something that kind of hits
me. This is why it's a podcast, man. We allowed really to talk.
this last summer for PR7s.
Yeah.
It says PR7s where guys get identified. And I feel like I have been identified. He knows that I'm bringing it, and, like, I still get no conversation, no sniff. Like, I'll send him messages. He just leaves me on red. So it's like, obviously, there's something else there than just my playing ability. So it's like, okay, cool. Then I guess I'll start playing rugby for me. So instead of playing in the PR7s championship, because the experts made it to the PR7s championship in DC, that same weekend, the Tag World Cup was going on in Ireland, in Limerick. And I've never made it to a World Cup before. And I don't think I will ever make it to another World Cup. And it was in tag rugby. So it's with the flags. It's real big in Australia and New Zealand. But I was able to represent Team USA at a World Cup.
Right. You literally have it on the checklist. Like, regardless of whatever you want to call the code, you played rugby at a World Cup. Like, it does count.
And that was something, like, when I got that invitation, it was like, I can't get this up. I remember talking to my mentors about it, talking to my parents about it, a couple of coaches about it, like, a lot of people that are really close in my life that I respect that know that if I give up this championship at PR7s, I'm hurting my brand. I'm hurting the experts franchise, like my team who I've been with day one, shrinking my chances for Mike to see me to go and play a code that isn't in the Olympics.
Right.
But if I just sit around and keep waiting for that phone call from Sevens, I can miss out on some really cool things, some other opportunities to make money or to further my career or to feed my family, you know? So I took the World Cup option, and that was my first time doing something for Corey, for CGI, do this himself, other than thinking about where is this going to take the name in the end of it.
Right. No. And I think that makes sense. And look, again, it, in and of itself, even still works in a long-term strategy because of the fact that it adds another additional level on that resume that you have that is already quite long but it provides that depth, whether it is from a business standpoint or whether it is from the player standpoint, you know? So I can completely understand that, which also is even better for the mental health of not wanting to just sit back and wait for the the semi-abuse of just like, yo, am I going to be due? Am I enough? Am I good enough? Like, even if you have everything. So I like the concept that you have with that. So, and it takes me back to kind of where it goes back to understanding and learning the business then of rugby. Because again, obviously you are navigating through this. You said that you have mentors. Was this something, are they like mentors that you did with rugby, or is it mentors that you kind of took out from your connections, through like Fisher or McCoy or the people that saw you or Yale? Like how did they play into it, or and subsequently continue to help develop that your career?
So I never, I mean, I don't know, call it the black man's curse. I never asked for help kind of growing up. I kind of did it with the people that were around me, the people that were kind of given to me. So I didn't have the mentors that I wish I had now. I guess my earliest mentor probably been Marcus Itabu. And I was already at Yale at that point. But I mean, he was a guy who was able to play rugby, starting to become financially free, starting making passive income.
Right.
He represented his country in the same scale in sevens that I wanted to do. So like, he was checking my boxes, and I was like, you know what? Like, that's somebody I should probably talk to. And getting in Marcus's head and, you know, letting him into mine was amazing for my career and amazing for what I was doing. And like, Marcus is a really smart, really raw guy, and he's going to give you the business and the ethics answer. And then he's going to give you like, yo, Corey, this is what you should do. Like, right. This will help you please them. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Check, check, check. And then he'll like look me in my chest and be like, yo, man, but this is also what you're going to do for you. And this is what you need to do to be a better human, to be a better person, and to be a better rugby player. And like, those kind of gut checks were great. Like, being a little brother to Marcus was amazing for my career.
And it sounds like he took like a very holistic approach to the whole thing, which I can imagine is very, very different than the maybe more militaristic variation of going about it than you were more normally used to.
Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. Marcus did his time in the Air Force.
Right.
So I don't mean, like I said, he probably came in at the right time, saying the right things. And then when I moved to Texas, you know, we keep in touch, but you know, he's kind of doing his own things. And I got my own connects down here in Austin. Me and Justin Hill have a lot of chats, a lot of mental chats. We kind of climb essentially the same mountain, where he's trying to get to that spot for reffing. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get to that spot for sevens. We're both getting answers that don't really make sense, but we're taking it, going back, fixing it. And then once the box is checked, there's not really anything else to be like, okay, now go work on this stuff. Like, you're doing it. When you look at our peers and the people around us, we are good enough to be in that group. Just for some reason, we don't get the nod. Yes, which I mean, so, like, I mean, this is a lot. This is lots of people. There are a lot of guys that I play with on the amateur side who don't have the setup that I have, that are just grinding, that are just blindly grinding. Like, I could, like, kudos to those guys that are keeping the dream alive without having as much success.
But, you know, but that speaks even to again, I repeat it again, why what you do is a unique blueprint that I think should be copied if you allowed it, because of the fact that it not only is it innovative for the industry, especially in the US, but it's something that also, I think, a mass creation of the concept allows maybe more some breakthroughs to occur. That allows people to now maybe get an opportunity that they weren't loud enough or did not have the knowledge enough to be able to do. And it speaks again to how much we're like, how much you set stepping stones for it, and you're picking and pulling and borrowing and throwing through. So it kind of brings me back to the Yale again. And you talked about Derek Fisher?
Dave Fisher.
You're right. Yeah. So like you connecting with Dave Fisher, I guess kind of first, who is Dave Fisher? And then subsequently, then how did that connect you into Yale?
Dave's a private guy, so I'm going to kind of keep his part for a little bit. But Dave had connections into Yale, and Yale's any Ivy League is a connection. Right. Any private organization is a connection, like spot, is a connection facility. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but right. Like, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. You don't get in unless a board of panel says, you know what? Yes. Because, I mean, we've seen all the TikToks and the reels, and or I guess I have. Maybe that's my algorithm, but yep. It'll show up, hey, like, I got this on my SAT, or I'm doing this right. And that, this and that. And these are the schools I got rejected from. And it's like, these people had way more academic than I had, but maybe I had right. A couple of real worlds. And again, I got into an interview, which I was able to then show, hey, this is me. This is why I should be on your campus. This is why I should be, you know, repping your brand. And they said, you know, we'll take a chance off.
Right. No, that, again, just constant, the blueprint. So for you, obviously, it goes back to be professional, show up on time. You do the interview, you be nice, you be good to people. Good things can happen, and people will show up for you consistently. Your time at Yale, from what you thought of Yale prior to going to it to what you thought of Yale after it, what were those differences for you?
Man, it was cool because I never really thought, I don't know, it's like you never really think of going to the moon. I guess I don't think of going to the moon because that just seems like out of my realm of imagination. I never right. thought about going to Yale because Ivy was never essentially in my mind. Like these are the things you have to do to get to an Ivy school. Got a 4.0. I had a B my freshman year. You're out. Like you're not going to like, you're not in any gifted classes. Like you're taking basic biology, basic English. Like Ivy's not going to be for you. I didn't right. realize that, you know, I could end up befriending a man who knows board members, and you know, I end up getting a cheeky way in. Like, there's, I'm not gonna act like I stood here on my own fruition and like yeah. I'm the reason why I got into Yale. No, it wasn't because of me. It was because of people like Marcus, because of people like Dave. It was because right. of the organization that I was working for that also tutored Yale students called Bulldog Tutors. Like, it was a conglomerate of things that being in the right place at the right time, showing my best self, and giving, you know, my best foot forward, which they were like, yeah, we'll let him in.
Right. What was that experience then ended up like? Because again, you know, you have all this, you're entering in, you have this great foundation, you know, which puts a lot of pressure for you to show out when it comes to what they do, because they're providing you an opportunity. What was the experience like for you in that?
I mean, it was good. So I ended up getting locked in with Greg McWilliams and Craig Wilson. I was out of eligibility for playing. So I ended up going on the coaching staff, and I ended up coaching men's backs on the male side or on the attack side. And they ended up coaching the women's offense on the lady side. And that was my entire time revolved around coaching. With Yale, and they were the reason why I ended up getting hooked in Japan, and then meeting people in Japan, shaking hands, having conversations, end up going back to Japan, and then doing a 4 or 6 month stint in Japan, playing rugby in Okinawa, or playing rugby in Tokyo, or you know, playing rugby in Hong Kong, and essentially just kind of building that repertoire of taking the blessings that was given to me, and then seeing if I can then compound on that.
Right.
So going to Yale at the beginning was like, oh, this would be a cool idea. Leaving it kind of gave me the mindset of any encounter or any opportunity that I can have to try and grow something, like I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm doing it respectfully. I'm doing it cordially. But I mean, I'm obviously not undercutting anybody. I didn't go to Yale to then try and, you know, step on somebody else. But
no,
respectfully, while I was there coaching, I was then, once my game was over, hello, my name is Corey Jones. I'm also still a player. I'm, you know, 26 years old and, you know, I am still looking to play, yada, 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 yada. And it's like, oh, right. Corey, awesome. Keep your name down. You know, we'll look at your website, blah, 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 blah. And then it just keeps bouncing and bouncing and bouncing and bouncing.
Yo, no. I think that's like so legit because of the fact that you're, again, you're maximizing your efforts, but you're also getting that chance to learn. Like, I can only imagine that doing the coaching, obviously, whenever you play, you know how to, you understand self. You understand how to look at a perspective from how you maneuver. But whenever you start to coach, now you have to look at it a lot more in total and a lot more wholly. You know, did that even change the way that from, what was that, 2017, 2018, that you were there?
Yep.
How did that change the way that you even looked the game following from 2019 to the present?
Oh, yeah, because I was – so, I mean, let me set the bar short. I wasn't at Yale for academics. I wasn't there. I took classes, but I wasn't there for school. Right. I was on the coaching staff, but I wasn't there, to be honest, to coach the players. I did do that, and I feel like I did a good job. And, you know, you could talk to Greg and Craig and – see, you know, how I matched up, but I was there to learn from them. So anytime Brad Dufek showed up, Brad also was a coach. He's coaching at another Northern College, the head coach right now. But anytime he was there and we had three coaches, I'd ask Greg, hey, Greg, can I put my cleats on for this training, for this session? And Greg would let me get in the mix. So now I'm learning from an amazing, bright mind like Greg McWilliams on attack and where I'm supposed to be, where my future is to be, like where I'm supposed to be on the push slide or where I'm supposed to be under the high ball or for the defense side. Like Craig Wilson is he's a ludicrous. This guy is so smart in defense. Oh my gosh. I'm serious. Like he is such a brilliant man on defense. The way he breaks down rugby analytics, which I think is the next big thing for USA rugby, is trying to have somebody learn the coding and the analytics of rugby. He was able to break down, hey, this is where defense should be. This is where your foot should be. This is where your head should be. This is what you should be looking at. And, like, it seems like it's pretty redundant, but it's things that, I don't know, you get taught math, and you're like, man, I don't understand this math. You get with another teacher and be like, oh, try it this way. Count with money. Count with your fingers. Count with this, you know, algorithm. And it's like, oh, like, I understand money. Boom, let's go with money. And he taught me tackling through, you know, money. And that just clicked in my head. And so now I'm making a lot more positive tackles, a lot more shoestring tackles. I'm getting to my feet quicker. Like it's just, I can go on and on and on about the coaches and the wealth of knowledge that I was secretly sitting down and listening and taking from them while also on the side over here running my backs and running our hands and our attack plays and things like that. And I had that, you know, in my bag. I know attack plays myself, but then when he's speaking of, oh, where's the B? He's like, oh, hold on, guys, one second. Let's listen to this. And I'm listening and learning like they're listening and learning. And it's made me a much better player, which kind of set me up to do so well in the MLR once I left Connecticut.
Man, you know, the journey that you've been on, again, it seems like you find or the opportunity presents for you to be in the right place, right time, to be able to experience the right things, to be able to keep going. Of course, there's intentionality that goes along with it. You're doing the work, you're being present, you're being ready. What they always say, opportunity is luck plus preparation met together, right? Yeah. You know? So it's always fun, or maybe it's the other way. Luck is opportunity plus preparation, whatever it is, but you know what I'm saying. So, but you know, you get these opportunities. You know, when 2020 came around, brings everything to a screeching halt. Like, you know, you had Austin Gilgronis. You were with the Gilgronis 2019, right? Right. So you have Austin Gilgronis. Like, you MLR season is totally in question. And obviously everything that's going on with Gil, whatever his name is, afterwards played out. Like, what? Like for you.
Adam, if you're watching this, they haven't caught you yet, brother. You're doing something good. Keep hiding.
The man's living strong in an island off of Australia.
Living his dream, brother. If you only knew his dream. I'm curious.
Mark Wahlberg somewhere going, damn you.
People are like, oh yeah, like this guy went bankrupt and he like just, I mean, he's man's doing good. Just take more for it.
Yeah. So for you in 2020, what did that set up? Because it felt like 2021, 2022, really 22, 23, but 21, 22, you just came out on fire. You've been held back. What happened for you in 2020 that made you say, okay, we got to take it up another notch over here?
I got capped in 2019. October 2019, Mike Friday said, you know what? It was the August before that, so the 2019 Nationals. Myself, Gavin D'Amore, and Aaron Martin all went fighting for two spots to go and play with Team USA in October. Wow. And I ended up having a great camp, ended up punching my ticket. I go to Germany. I end up getting a red card against Fiji. First game in the red, white, and blue. I'll post it on Instagram later to show you. I'll tag you. But the guy hits me high. I try to stiff arm him. It like hits him in the face, and then it rides up his head. So my elbow makes contact with his face. That was the very beginning. 2019 was the very beginning when they were looking at CTEs and taking head more serious or head knocks more serious. And that's when Falcon Eye was this new artificial like code that watches games, and anytime something like strikes the head, it flags you. So playing Fiji, I stiff arm a Fiji player. He gets a high tackle penalty on me. So USA ball, Fiji back 10. And we end up losing the game, close one, but end up going back to the locker room, have a debrief. Everything's going good. Corey's starting next game. Like, sweet. Like, I'm locked in. I'm on it. And the assistant to the board, assistant to the judge, was like, "Hey, Corey, you're being cited for a red card. Falcon Eye picked up contact with a player's head. You have to go to citing now."
Oh my god!
And I was like, "Oh, you're playing with me? Like, that's not for real." And they're like, "I'm sorry. Like, we're about to warm up for France." So it was an hour and a half, 2 hours after the game had ended, where they were like, "Hey, sorry,
it's out of sight, out of mind at this point."
And I was like, "Well, what did I do wrong?" And they were like, "Oh, it's this play right here." And I was like, "Well, on the field, this guy did the wrong thing." And they're like, "Yes, we know that, but this software picked up you making contact with this person's head, and we're trying to create a safer environment." So that ended up taking 40 minutes of me sitting in this room, like questioning myself, like thinking like my chances were over. Little did I know they probably were over. Like, I haven't gotten another sniff since. But I mean, I'm in there freaking out, like talking to my liaison for USA, like he's my lawyer, like, "Hey, how do I handle this? What do I say? Like, what am I going?" Eventually had to say that I was guilty with no malicious intent, and that was a 3-game ban. So
basically the rest of the tournament.
So I missed New Zealand, Australia, France, and then able to come back and play the last game against England at the end of the tournament. So I ended up playing Fiji and England, and that was my entire stint for Team USA.
Jeez. Yo, that was hard.
So when that ended, it was like, "Hey, guys, it was a good tournament." Like, they still spoke really positive of me. Everything was still on the high. Phil Green did my analytics afterwards. He broke it down, a lot of good things, some work-ons. You know, he was speaking like, "Your kickoffs are going to be slot in nicely with our system. Like, you know, we need to win more balls. This is coming off of the year where Pinky and Matai and Martin and all these guys are like number two in the world in the series, and they had the highest kickoff retention and the most tries, and like USA is buzzing." So I'm thinking like, "Oh, I got a spot. Like, I'm gonna fit in nicely in this plan."
Right.
And then COVID hit, nothing. And that's when it was like, "Hey, you need to go work on this." Cool. Like, I'm still riding this wave back from Germany.
Yeah.
Cool. I no worries. Happens again. No worries. And I start finding like a lot of success. Tournament. I'm winning tournaments. going to all these other countries now, winning these tournaments. Like, the contracts are looking good. The sponsorships are looking good. So I'm like, oh, it's just due time that I'm going to get another phone call for my national team.
Right.
And just years kept stacking on, stacking on, stacking on.
4 years later, still nothing popped up.
Unfortunately.
God, dog. Yo, Mike, man, you got to get, I don't even know if you listen to the show, but whenever it's posted and we clip it, I need you to be paying attention to this that much more if you hadn't already been paying attention to everything else that's been going on. So,
Mike knows. He knows. He's heard it. Great America Rugby. Lance has done a great job in highlighting players that he feels should be seen or should have that opportunity. Like, Lance does a really, really good job. And also being a part of NAV, NAV does a really good job of getting guys the exposure and putting guys in tournaments to succeed. And when we do succeed, it just gives another golden star to NAV. And then it just continues to kind of filter the positive trend of Corey's a good rugby player, Corey's a good captain. Like, let's give Corey a look. But unfortunately, it's just not the sniff yet.
So at this point now, where you're at, what's the future looking like for Corey as you enter? We're in 2024, 4 years out from 2028 LA Olympics, 7 years out. Obviously, you're not 15, so the Rugby World Cup 2031 doesn't make a difference. But, 2027 Rugby World Cup Sevens. You got Dubai Sevens. Like, is there a plan that you have that is hoping that you can lead you into that position? And let me add another factor. Is there a chance that maybe you go try and take a shot at playing for another country and doing the cycle of what it would take to be able to pull that off?
Yeah, no, I thought about that. When I was in Japan, that was going to be a strong look to go and play Japan Sevens, because again, another nation wanted me more than my own nation wanted me.
Right.
But COVID hit, and when COVID hit, like all communication, all that stopped. I ended up having to come back. The trip stopped going over across seas. Like, COVID, obviously, I mean, I'm a very blessed, very fortunate person, but COVID ruined a lot of things for a lot of people, and that was one of them.
Man, is it still something possible that you could try and do, whether it's doing the, what is it, like 3-4 years that it has to take to, or is it just not worth the time?
I'm at the point now where I'm getting older, but not getting older. Like, at some point, I got to then think about, do I want a family? Do I want to raise kids? Do I want to have a 401k and be able to retire before I'm 80? Because everything that I've been doing so far isn't putting, putting things in the savings, but it's not, thinking about future college kids, that kind of stuff. So, to be honest, if it's not USA, it may not happen unless 23andMe ends up finding that I am, have something else that I can go to, and I can end up pushing the passport issue quickly, or, maybe we're talking pipe dreams now.
My brother, your entire career has been a pipe dream. So let's not act like that's something that's so out of the way of the abnormality.
Man. If I do it, it'll be on U.S. soil. And if I don't do it, then I don't do it at all.
I feel that. I feel that.
I'm really blessed and really humbled to be able to accomplish what I've accomplished. Like, at this point now, bringing the success to Nav and Rob and JK, and seeing JK at the camps and stuff now, it may not have anything to do with me, but I feel ownership. And because we were doing so well, that's why he's getting looks. I feel like there are other really good coaches out there, but their team's not winning. So it kind of equates that they're not doing something right.
Right.
Which, there's a whole structure that we have to kind of go through, but I feel like if I can keep doing things like that up there, and it keeps putting the guys that I'm around in better places, then, man, to be honest, I'm happy with that. My buddy Simi's talking about that he wants to go to Tonga. and he can maybe get a look and play for Tonga's national team.
That's awesome. Like,
that's all from the success that Nav has had. Right? Man, finger, I mean, nothing can take away from Simi running that ball. Simi's the club seventh MVP of 2023. Nobody can take that away from Simi. But me being a part of Nav and us winning these tournaments, I feel like I got, you know, a little 1% in there to kind of lift Simi a little bit higher. He can maybe step on my shoulder to then, you know, ring that Tongan bell, and then, you know, boom, make Simi's in the Olympics. Like, again, it's a lot of thoughts, a lot of pipe dreams, a lot of ideas.
Right. But
if I can't make it, I would hope that somebody around me makes it.
Well, I guess it kind of leads me kind of to that last little kind of wrap up of questions. But, you know, do you think that you could find yourself being or putting yourself into a position where you become a professional mentor? Because once again, you have a literal blueprint that has functionally worked. While accessing has been a series of opportunities that have been presented to you, it has been a lot of knowledge that has been accrued within a special person and being able to be entrusted with it. Do you feel like at some point in time you could find yourself, whether for business-wise, preferably, or, you know, personally, you know, helping to mentor these next generation of rugby players who are trying to find their way, maybe after you play or whatever, to be able to help guide them through the process that, you know, you also had guidance, but also wanted to be able to have, you know, maybe an easier pathway through it?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like, I make the joke now that if I make it to the Olympics, it won't be because I'm playing. And guys, like, that's kind of like hinting that, like, at some point I'll coach. And I could only be blessed enough to then coach at that national level, because I do feel like I feel like I could bring something to it. Like, if it's not on the athletic side, it's on the technical side. That's one thing that I've been hearing from a lot of the guys that have played with me recently, that, hey, Corey's a smart captain. Like, and then I hear that from the refs too. Corey's a smart player. Like, I play the clock, I play the ref, I play the opposing team. You know, I try to keep my guys in the smartest opportunity, or the smartest way that they can be in, so that we win the game. You know, we don't have to beat teams by 45 anymore to hold the trophy. You know, we just have to beat them by one. So, yeah, no, that's kind of like the technical side that I am slowly starting to get into and think about a little bit more, that eventually I'll have a group of guys, or maybe one or two guys, that is serious about footy the way I was serious about footy. And they say, you know what, Corey, like, teach me something. Because I tell the guys I put with at the Huns, there's no secret recipe. Like, I got a cookbook. And, like, anybody who wants to have a chat, they can call my phone. There's a lot of guys that hit my line up pretty regularly that's like, hey, Corey, man, tell me about this. Or I played in this tournament, watch this film. Like, my life has been rugby. My professional career has been rugby. So when guys hit me up and say, hey, man, look at this, it's like, I enjoy doing this. So what, watch your film? Easy. I'd love to sit down and watch rugby film. And now I'm not critiquing myself, I'm critiquing somebody else. Even better, because I'm my worst critic. I'm always sitting down like, oh, you could have did this better, that better. And like, oh, you got up and you got the poach. Well, you could have got the poach sooner. Like, you took too long to get the poach. So yeah, that's definitely looking to be the next track. I'm not sure how I'm gonna monetize that. I'm not sure what that even looks like. I know Coach Chris Brown, who used to be the women's coach. Head coach, he's doing something with that. He's in that realm. When he was with Rhino and I was at Rhino, he was speaking about that. That's something that piqued my interest. I just saw Lizard, Steve Lewis. He's now jumping into coaching, consulting. So it seemed like there's these masterminds out there that I could still learn from, and then maybe help out, you know, a little bit on the back end.
Man, I love it. You know, I want to give you your flowers once again as we wrap it up. Corey, man, like I said before, you are a unique journey, and you have made a legitimate impact. Understanding your story even more so now lets me know that you are going to do some amazing things in the future. You've literally built a professional career from nothing, untraditionally. which is one of the hardest things to do. And I hope that you know how significant that is to the history of rugby in the world, as well as the history of American rugby, and that you are an impact there. And it's been a pleasure being able to get to learn more about you and understand your journey. And I look forward to being able to watch and see where it goes. And if anything, be able to help best I can. But there's no doubt that God got a real good future for you. And it's presenting itself more and more every single day. So thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your story with me, man.
Yeah, no, cheers, brother. No, thank you. No, I really, really appreciate that.
Awesome. Oh, last thing. Where can people find you to be able to talk to you?
Man, so you guys follow me on CJ I Do This on all social media platforms. Also, I'm going to give a shout out, obviously, to Caviva, the Kava sponsor, the drink that goes in my body that propels me to have my chill days when I don't want to take ibuprofen. Thank you to Thorm, which is a supplement company that backs me. They also back USA Sevens, but that's something that I found when I was taking my time at Yale. That's a company that they believe in science first. Having a science background, like, that's something I also believe in. Big Sky Cigars, again, when we lift a trophy, we lift a cigar as well. Shout out to those guys. To NAV Sevens for giving me the platform that I have been in. Without them, you know, I couldn't have reached this high. And through Lululemon for keeping me in my active leisure wear anytime I'm not in my rugby kit, I'm rocking Lulus.
Yo, I love it. I love it. Corey, everybody, man, thank you so much, brother.
Man, thank you again, brother. I enjoyed this. I'm glad that we got to catch back up. And I can't wait to see what the next 10 years holds for us.
Corey, I want to thank you again so much for taking the time to give us your story. Thank you for all the information, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of your process. And y'all, thank you so much for taking the time to listen, taking the time to check out our interviews. Of course, you guys can check out our other interviews. Last week, we had Damonte Nobles. Previously to that, we had Dr. Rovlin Chow, Eddie Evans, Wendy Young of Your Scrum Half Connection, and so many more, man. We got a great list of these interviews that you guys can absolutely go check out, and I absolutely recommend that you do. In the meantime, I want you to know that I hope that you are happy, I hope that you are healthy, and of course, most importantly, I hope that you know that you are highly favored. Until next time, check us out for our news episode coming up on Wednesday. Absolutely, there's a lot happening this past weekend. Looking forward to having you guys. Till next time. Cheers.